This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting February 21st, 2011.
We should probably get called to order today because we have a full agenda since the charter will be being discussed and the authors of the charter would like feedback. So today we will be beginning our agenda with the normal welcoming instruction. So we'll be doing a roll call of the voting members. So is Rhonda here?
Roll call.
Rhonda's not. Kyle, yes.
Here.
Steven.
Here.
Tom.
Yes.
Nicole.
Here.
Chris. Clark.
Yes.
Evan.
Here.
Billy. Here. Bobby.
Here.
Ben. He's here but out getting food. Chris Heckman.
Here.
Yevgeny.
Here.
Me.
Here.
I am here. Asha. Not here. Siska. Not here. Jen. Not here. Mia.
Yeah.
Here. And then Togba. All right. And for those of you I did not call, we're going to go around the room and introduce. So we'll start with our essay right here.
Marquis Hawkins.
Brent?
Jolly,
I think the last one is the gentleman who's just sitting right down. Could you introduce yourself?
Oh, yes. My name is Sean Murphy. I'm the original plan.
So with that, we're actually going to be skipping passing minutes today and dive right into announcements and reports. So, of course, always check out CornellGPSA.com, and if you have not uploaded a profile, please do so, especially now that it's already 3/4 of the way through the year. And we'll be moving into executive updates. And so the first one up on the executive updates is Brian Forrester, and he'll be discussing the formation of the GPSA handbook, which I'll pull up here momentarily.
So, while you're saying that together, so this is something I've been writing alongside of the charter review. So, this document's not going to go out to anyone until the charter review has been finished, because a lot of the material that is written here correlates with the charter review. So, after the 14th of March, then this will start to go out, and then eventually to the entire voting assembly. So, you can start scrolling. So the beginning part is just the background on the university system and the assemblies currently at Cornell. Next page. These are the people that if the GPSA has any problems as far as administrative issues, this is the list of people to contact for specific reasons. Next page. This is the page about the Office of Assemblies and who to contact for GPSA help. Next page. This reviews the GPSA, its basic background and our functions. The composition of the assembly, which will be discussed this evening with the charter review, along with the list of the different superfields and which fields fall into each superfield and whether each group gets one or two or three representatives. Next page. This is regarding the voting members. That will be discussed this evening, so this may change depending on how we vote on the charter. Keep going. This is one page that explains the GPI, which was passed back in 2007's GPSA, as well as the strategic plan, which was released last year. So this explains the involvement of the GPSA and encourages people to review those documents. This reviews the rights and responsibilities of the GPSA members that most of this is taken from Chris Clark's work. So that's included in there along with the responsibilities as an officer in the GPSA. That's more of that. These are the list of the standing committees as well as their tasks. This is a list of all the assemblies that we send representatives to along with their positions. The UA one is still we're still figuring that out. Right now, I just have them as X. this is regarding the funding. So this is two parts. Part one looks at the activity fee. So this lists all the groups to be going that receive activity fee money, and as well as how the GPSA uses the activity fee money that is given. And the second part, and how we exactly vote on that. So this would be perfect for next year when we have to go through the activity fee decision again. And then the second part is how the GPSA FC works and allocates money to student groups on campus. Going. This discusses how you bring business before the GPSA, so it's a little on Robert's Rules of Order, how to bring forth motions, you can keep going, as well as a blank template for if you want to write a resolution on a particular issue the GPSA is going to take. Keep going. A typical agenda for the GPSA, again, depending on the discussion of the charter, this may change, but right now I just have it as the charter has it in the draft panel review tonight. General timeline of what the GPSA does throughout the year, and I also include the FCA because the funding and deadlines that's included as well as the events committee. All the important websites, so Ben, don't worry, you're top. websites, email addresses. And then the last section, you can keep going, is just important forms, including to register the GPSA with the SAO. Go ahead. The form that Tom sends out once a month for committee report updates. And then the last one is the important one, if you want to get money back from us. And with that, that's currently what I have. Like I said, this is not going to go out to anyone until after the charter review, because I'm sure, depending on our conversation, this text is going to be changed.
Is there any questions at this time for Brian? Yes, Ben.
Is it your intent to solicit feedback, editorial approval, or endorsement of this body somehow?
Yeah.
How?
So my plan is, after the 14th, it's going to go out to the people who worked on the charter. So mostly that's the committee chairs. And once that's done, then it goes to the entire voting body. And something we have to decide is whether we're going to vote to approve it or something like that. But I'd rather have the charter review people reviewing it first, and then it goes out to everyone to review. So
I see an easy statement at the beginning, you know, reviewed and endorsed by GPSA a year or something.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Chair, well, who's going to be maintaining the document? That's
something we have to discuss. So right now, the charter does not mention that at all. This document does not mention that at all either, so I'm open to suggestions. It won't be me.
It probably would be faster and easier to keep updated if just it were under a specific committee that was identified in...
Well, off the top of my head, I would say operations and staffing, because a lot of it deals with the internal goings of the GPSA.
Yeah, I bet it wouldn't need to be approved by this body every time a change came or something like that.
Yeah. Me? Oh, okay. Good.
I just have to say, this was like a great document. I wish it was there 3 years ago. Congratulations, Brian, because that's
second.
You have
now. You haven't
read the check.
That's why we're projecting at this resolution.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Moving on in the agenda, we have any staffing vacancies, Tom?
There is one vacancy in the Student Insurance Advisory Committee. Its first meeting will be held next month in March. I have one graduate student who expressed interest in the committee from a solicitation that went out over Facebook to our group. However, there's a second opening available, and I would make that known. It meets twice in the month of March. I have the date. If you know of interest, they can come directly to me at this point. Student Insurance Advisory Committee. Health insurance, things of that nature.
If you're interested, please contact Tom, or if you know somebody who is interested, please refer them to Tom. Jen, any updates?
As of now, I don't think we have anything to address.
We have shirts for people, and most people in this room, many people in this room, should be picking up shirts tonight if they've never picked them up before. We want to get rid of the shirts.
Have you ordered shirts?
We have shirts. No, they were from last year. If people aren't involved anymore, we can give out shirts to somebody else that is involved.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't have a shirt, then please talk to us.
We brought the bumper stickers and the bottle openers too. So,
please
take them. I can't make that clear enough. Take them.
Although we might save some of those for our education. Oh, yeah.
We should have known that we were the orientation for this year.
Well, we didn't have bottle openers.
Yeah, it's also
the bottle openers.
But the bumper's good.
Yeah. We didn't have those
either. Oh, okay. Never mind then.
All right, moving on in the agenda, updates for me. A week and a half ago, there was a leadership breakfast in which how policies were formed and maintained at Cornell was discussed. If you have any interest in finding out how that is, there is a central office that reviews it, but they don't actually set the policies. The policies are set by the executive in charge of different organizations, so mostly vice presidents of like student services or health and human services are the ones who set the policies at Cornell. So if you have any interest in learning more, please contact me. President Thornton, when he visited at the advisory, at the discussion meeting, gave a call for input directly from graduate students. So if you know of any issues that you think could be brought to President Thornton's attention or you think would be worthwhile to bring to senior administration, please just send him an email. I think it's david.thornton@cornell.edu. That's his direct line. And so feel free. He actually called for more student input. Any questions at all for me? Seeing none, we'll move on to the business of the day. And the first item up for the business is Resolution 4, the one that was discussed twice now.
I think we skipped the line on the agenda.
Which line?
I'm
sorry.
We're skipping from me to me. So.
Yep. we'll now go into updates from the standing committees and liaison updates as appropriate. So the first one who contacted me was Bobby, and he wanted to discuss the identification of field group organizations.
So it's my understanding that the field groups was part of a category with the MSP funding. It was created to encourage participation across the community. And it's come to my attention that, one, the FC is lacks information to be able to identify who the field organizations are, and two, and probably more pressing, of the 90 fields that the school has provided me, we have about 23 that applied for funding this last year. So obviously, only a fraction of all potential fields, and I think this is a great method of, one, communicating the GPSA function on campus and getting broader involvement across the campus. The challenge is trying to find out who the organizations or clubs are that represent each of these various fields. A couple of attempts across the school, but it seems that information really isn't readily available or centralized anywhere. So just kind of opening this, and want to at least raise this one to this group so that it crossed your constituents. If you know people who don't have, haven't filed for funding and can do so, especially as we're approaching the election day coming up in April. I'm happy to send out a list of fields that have been provided to me. And also a list of organizations that apply for field funding. I don't actually have any direct way of cross-referencing what field they originally applied under. But that might be a starting point for people to spread the word through their fields. I super recommend those to encourage people to apply.
Are there any questions or comments?
Yeah, how do you apply? So who should I talk to about that?
So the short answer is that every year in April there is an budget process that occurs, and there should have been an email that was sent out late last week from the Office of Assemblies detailing the dates. I can forward that to you after the meeting if you'd like. And it's a formula. you know, based upon, you know, a fixed amount than a variable amount per member of the school.
Ben, I believe you're next.
So the authoritative list of what fields exist is from the graduate school. That doesn't include professional schools, but within the graduate school, the authoritative list of what is a field is from the graduate school. And the advisor for each field recognized group should be the director of graduate studies for that field. And that list is also from the graduate school.
Sure.
No?
No. You can have anybody as your advisor.
I think that the DGS has a
There's a form that you fill out when you get to the SAO, the Student Activity Belt. In that form, you need the signature of the advisor for your organization, who can be anyone, and the chair of your department. So the SAO has this information. I've asked them for it. I've not gotten a response to any of my emails, but they have it. So it should be simply a matter of saying, give us those forms. We're collecting them on our behalf. Please give us those points.
So it's probably worth discussing outside of the meeting because it's a challenge because there are fields that are not yet organized to register with the SAO. So we would not know who their advisor is or anything. So the authoritative contact person is the DGS if there's not a registered field organized in the SAO.
And Tom and I, just not to bog this down, Tom and I had a meeting back in, well, I was there, but Tom had a meeting in January to form a field organization for those fields that were not represented in command. However, for precisely the reasons you outlined, we didn't have a list of what those fields were. So we had a meeting for like the two people who we knew. I mean, it's very difficult to reach out, of course, when you don't know who to reach out to. Tom and I, again, speaking for the humanities, but email BGS to no avail. The emails just simply don't get responded.
So seeing that this is probably an issue that we need to have continuing discussion, anybody who has any suggestions or comments or an idea of how to approach this should probably start a conversation with Bobby, and then we should move forward. I'd definitely be interested, so you can contact me as well. And just due to time constraints, we'll probably have to move forward in the agenda. And so Evan is up to discuss an update from the Ad Hoc Survey Committee.
So very quickly, on behalf of the five members of the Ad Hoc Survey Committee, three of whom are here in this room, Steve are the two members of Mike Hanson, who's the chair, and Chris Diller, who's not in sociology. We've met several times now to talk about survey methodology, sampling, to design questions. We coordinated with the SRI. We've talked to the IRB. Things are moving well. There are probably other acronyms, too. Resolution 2, which, of course, I presented to this body several months ago, we voted on and passed, which created this committee, specifies that we have to show a draft to this assembly of our questionnaire before it goes out. That should be happening very soon, perhaps even this week. We'll post it online in some form or other, mail it out to the voting members, and encourage you to read through and offer any comments you may have. We're looking to run the survey. We don't want to run it over spring break for obvious reasons. It'll take about 3 weeks to run. So it'll probably run starting after spring break at the end of March, run for 3 weeks, a couple of weeks to process data, and we'll prepare a report for this body, again, in Resolution 2, specified by the end of the academic year. That report will probably be lengthy and complicated and all sorts of things. Probably won't be presented in this meeting. It'll just be a report available online. Obviously, the main goal here is that next year's Appropriations Committee has this report when it comes time to the SEC again.
Any brief questions or comments for Evan? Being none, we'll move. Are there any updates from Events Committee?
Something's happening. I'm a little busy personally right now, so I haven't been thinking too much about stuff. I know we have coming down the peg. Well, one, I'll say that we probably are not going to be doing it today, as I was hoping, just because it got physically challenging and we couldn't squeeze it in before the season would end. But we got some interesting information about using the ticket office in the Illustrate Hall to sell tickets likely online in the future. That being said, there's also the possibility of doing both a joint event with Ithaca College graduate students, and also we have an inter-school mixer coming up with a law school of social sciences, probably both of those in the next month. And then grad ball is April 1st. So that's stuff happening here now. We're also working on a Iron Chef cooking competition, probably for after Jadwell. So that should be. No, that actually is the only date that looks like all available. So that is the for
any other questions or comments from Nicole? Being none, we'll move on. Does the Student Advocacy Committee have an update?
Yes, the Student Advocacy Committee will be meeting on Thursday, 3 in here, and we'll be discussing the issues dealing with technology problems for graduate students, the possibility of establishing an emergency funding source for graduate students through this body. It's something that Ben and I have been working on. And also the issue of diversity and how it's been resolved or addressed in the body. So.
3 p.m. in this?
Yes.
Yeah, very, very wrong.
Yep.
Any other questions or comments from Ricky? Seeing none, we'll move on. Is there an update from the Appropriations Committee?
We're doing our work. I think we're going to have our draft of the revision points proposed for the FC guidelines. And I believe that I will be presenting those to the body in an upcoming meeting. And you guys can feel free to contact me if you'd like to update on that beforehand. I don't know if we're going to post online or if we're I will probably work on some kind of summary document soon. But yeah, we're quite I think we've got a lot of work done on that.
Any questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll move on. Do any of the liaisons, do any of the other assemblies wish to address the body? Well, all right, seeing none, we'll move on into the business of the day. And so the first item on the business is the discussion of Resolution 4, which is a resolution opposing the proposed changes to the Cordell Council for the Arts. This was discussed at the January 24th business meeting, as well as the previous discussion meeting, and Evan has the floor to discuss this matter.
So I've talked your ear off about this, your collective ear off about this already, so hopefully you know what the resolution is about, you know the changes. A couple of a quick things. I'm making a personal commitment to be more positive in my life, so I've changed the title of the resolution. I like a resolution affirming the necessity of individual grants to CCA. More positive, a little more upbeat, rather than opposing the change. I mean, obviously, that's the same thing. One other small change is that the first resolve clause says that the provost hold a meeting. I've added in there the provost or his designee. I found out that he's actually designated John Silicano, provost, to work on this issue. So, I mean, you know, the idea is that there would be a public meeting, not that it necessarily be Kent Fox. Another quick update. I mean, I know there's already a whereas clause in here that mentions President Scorton's remarks that it is, quote, time for Cornell to step up and advocate for the arts and humanities nationally. To that end, he's actually written an editorial recently. It was in the Washington Post, and I got passed on to me, basically saying that, I mean, in the national forum, saying, as President Cornell, I think the humanities are important. That, of course, he's talking about the NEH specifically, but I think arts funding is in the same sort of basket here. So I think that at a time when, although I agree it's not likely to happen, Congress is debating the notion of zeroing out the national endowments for the arts and humanities. On our own campus, we can show this kind of leadership by continuing the great tradition, the 40-year tradition of individual grants for student arts projects. I should tell you, this resolution, obviously, of course, we cannot compel the provost to do anything, obviously. However, I think that this resolution has already had an effect. It's come to the attention of the provost, of John Cortano, and of Dean Kent Kleinman of Art, Architecture, and Planning, who's been leading this changing process. meetings that may not otherwise have taken place have been held, and I, you know, would like to think that, that this resolution is in some small part maybe responsible for that, for moving the debate, for at least making sure that the debate happens. So I want to be perfectly clear. The resolution says things like the GPSA recommends that. It doesn't compel the provost to do anything, and of course we don't have authority over the GPSA.
So at this time, seeing that this is up for a vote, is there any member who wishes to speak in opposition to the current resolution?
Point of information.
Yes.
I believe it comes in. I'm not sure if this is the most updated version of the resolution.
It possibly is not.
Okay. Okay, just wanted to make that note. Thank you.
Sorry, that's entirely my fault.
To clarify, is the next to last resolve clause added the current resolution, as it says, we resolve the provost office said something, or did you change that?
I did change that.
That's the change.
Yeah, the most recent version is one that I, sorry, this is my fault, I should make sure that my PowerPoint is accurate. The most recent version was sent out as an email that went both to the voting body and to the non-voting body, and I think the word file is something like GPSA resolution for GPA, something like that.
It might be on the printout. Yeah.
The printout. The substantive stuff, I hope this shouldn't interfere with us going on, but I can read it out. The first resolve clause is resolved that the GPSA recommends that Kent Fox, provost of Cornell University, or his designee, hold a public meeting with interested parties, including faculty, staff, and students. Resolved that the Graduate Professional Student Assembly recommends that the provost office reinstate individual grants to the constituent components of the CPA.
Okay. Moving on, is there any member who wishes to speak out against the current motion? Seeing none, we'll move into a more formal debate. Is there any questions or clarifications at this time you would like to ask the author or any member? Seeing none, we'll move into informal debate. Any informal questions? The chair would also entertain a motion to close. Is there a second?
Second.
So Ben moves and Chris Heckman seconds. And so we shall now vote on the matter at hand, which is resolution number 4, a resolution opposing the proposed changes to Cornell Council for the Arts. So all those
more positive.
Yes. A resolution and survey. So with all the friendly amendments already mentioned, that's how it will be voted through and sent to the provost. So those voting in favor, please raise your placards now. Fourteen in favor. Any opposed, please raise your placards now. And one abstention. Well, any additional abstention? No. So with a vote of 14-0-1, resolution 4 passes. Moving on in the agenda, we will now begin the process of discussing the resolution, the charter revision. So this is resolution 6. And so Tom will be discussing the work that the Operations Staffing Committee, specifically the GPSA Charter Review Committee, has performed over the past, since the beginning of the fall semester. And so he has the floor.
All right, thank you. I have my paper slides here, so I'm going to sit down and read from them. I have a pointer if I need to point anything out here. So let's just get into this. We have 40 minutes on the agenda. I'll probably use them all. I will not apologize for that. This is an important issue. It's one we're all going to have to talk about because I'm forcing you to. I hope to hear from you, if not during my presentation, afterwards or email. So on the slide right now, first thing is Resolution 6 has the name regarding the charter and bylaws of the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly. It has a number of authors to the resolution. They are listed on the screen.
I will say that during this meeting, after this meeting, and before the next business meeting, I will continue to take co-authors to this resolution as a sign of support. So next slide, please. This is how I want to proceed over the 40 minutes I have, by covering three basic areas of changes that I have identified within the charter. First is it would be considered membership changes, and I want to spend 15 minutes on that, covering changes to the GPSA's charter under Article 2, Authority, and Article 4, Membership. The second would be procedural changes, which I want to spend 10 minutes on, the GPSA bylaws, particularly a new item, Item 4, procedural. And the third area I want to discuss tonight is committee changes, specifically to the GPSA charter, Article 5, Officers, Article 6, Committees, and under the GPSA bylaws, Item 3, Committees. And as I note on the right, you may submit written comments to me at the email gpsa-btoperations@assembly.cornell.edu. I prefer to go to that email since there will be a formal written record with the Office of Assemblies that will be kept on file. Next slide, please. All right, here's where we are right now. We're at the GPSA Charter Review Timeline slide, and I'm suggesting that today, February 21st, the resolution be circulated to the voting members, and that in the upcoming meetings on the March 7th discussion meeting, a resolution be discussed by the voting members with their field representatives at the breakout sessions. And I'm recommending that March 14th the resolution be debated, and if debate can be closed, voted on by the voting members. The reason for that is in the month of April, there are exactly two meetings scheduled at this point. One is the April 4th discussion meeting, the other is the April 18th business meeting. Given the proposed charter, you'll see it is relevant that these two meetings exist and be known what the charter is prior to them, so that new voting members can be elected and new officers can be elected in accordance with the new charter. Next slide, please. All right, this is an overall highlight of some of the changes. It reiterates what I mentioned in the agenda. I used a different font coloration to highlight what's new. And so if you see sort of a purple font, that's going to indicate new text. I more or less have made a slide on every single item of new text throughout the presentation and thus reflecting the ones throughout the charter and bylaws. And I did specifically note that under Articles 7, 8, 9, and 10, the color has changed because the enumeration of the article has changed as opposed to important content within those articles. And the reason for that is, as will become clear, it crossed out on Article 7 of the Charter. And very much related, therefore, on GPSA bylaws, we now have a new item, Item 4, it's now procedures, and I guess I should have highlighted 5 under bylaws since that's a new number as well. So that's a very broad level. If I didn't have the supporting text behind me, I could talk from this one slide. But fortunately, I have a number of other slides. So let's go to part one of the agenda here. So this is going to be the section on membership changes. Now, I have somewhat arbitrarily, although I do believe it comes with thought, selected the changes in the order I wish to review them, and I ask that you have patience as we review them in that order. Again, I think three broad categories of change exist, and I think it's important to think of them somewhat related in those ways. So the first one I want to highlight is under the Charter, and you'll see at the top of the slide it says Charter Article 2, Authority. During the rest of the slide of this presentation, it will indicate which document is being discussed and which article is being discussed. So if you see charter at the top, you know we're in the charter. If you see bylaws at the top, you know we're in the bylaws. I bring this up as a kind of emblematic change that exists, not because it's particularly important, but because it reflects the level of detail that went into the change in this charter. For example, I capitalized the word C in calendar. I went through this document carefully. I also changed things like wording from shall to the much more passive construction of is. So currently read, it currently read the provost shall or will consult. You know, it's been pointed out, as we try to couch our language more carefully, the limitations of the GPSA would be better reflected by the phrase, the provost is requested to consult with the GPSA in the formulation of the university calendar. Again, this is so minor a change that I almost didn't have to make it. But since we are going through this with the finest of tooth combs, I wanted to point this out to you and then move on. Also in Article 2, under authority, we've made two other changes which might be more substantial. One has to do with wording about how it was previously worded. The GPSA may appoint graduate professional students to serve on committees of the GPSA and other assemblies, which captures, I think, the possibility that other assemblies other than the current ones may form someday. Because I should hope that we will not change the charter until that day happens. Section 2.8, likewise, I've added the phrase as described in the bylaws. This has to do with university assembly representation. As it turns out, university assembly is on equally unstable footing as anybody can be. And we're not going to refer to anything fixed when it comes to university assembly. It's been my policy to assume the university assembly will change its charter every year from now on, and that everybody that we associate may do so. They have the right to do so. So I've tried to remove any fixed language from this charter with respect to other bodies, except their name. So we have to accept the fact that the university assembly's name will stay the same. But anything representing the delegates that go to the university assembly, I've decided to move to bylaws. That is going to be a theme that will recur throughout this presentation. So while these three points are minor, I think they are setting the stage for what we try to do philosophically with this charter. Next slide, please. The bigger changes, of course, have to do with some of the later articles in the charter, specifically under Article 4, membership. Now, again, if it's in purple, that means that this entire section is new. No wording here. It has been recycled. And so it's important that if the first section of Article 4 is new, there'd be a reason for it. I'd like to speak about the reasoning behind all the changes at greater length than I can. But I will say, as we go through these, write down your questions, and maybe we can take them at the end so it's not to get derailed. But here, what I want to say very briefly is that Section 4.01 represents a kind of Bill of Rights for graduate students. It might be debatable whether or not this section need be written in a charter, and that is a debate we could have. However, what it does is quite clearly lay out the possibility that every graduate professional student at Cornell has certain following rights, and as they're enumerated, there are five of them. They are, I think, somewhat, in some cases, broad, but I think important to state. Number one, about contributing to your academic and social community. Number two, about the possibility of regularly attending GPSA meeting and remaining informed. And you'll notice there's a kind of escalation of responsibility here. The third one, then, is after you've attended meetings, you now have the right to apply and serve on committees. The fourth one is to engage in discussion and bring for issues or concerns, so in other words, speaking at meetings, becoming active, and thus it leads, I think, naturally into the fifth clause, which is that you may bring a resolution for the GPSA. Now, technically, any student already has the right to do this within our charter, but it's buried within language in one of the last articles of our charter. Here, we're fronting the fact that every graduate professional student has the right to bring a resolution for the GPSA. But we do not describe how one can do that. That's appropriate. That's not done until later in the charter. But it is appropriate at this point in the very first section of the membership article to highlight that any graduate professional student has the right to do this. And I think the second piece of the section, then also building upon that philosophy, says, for those graduate professional students who have membership within the GPSA, additional rights and responsibilities shall be commensurate. And I think this is a very nice lead-in to what then follows. Clearly defined membership policy, using words and phrases that will set the record straight as to what status our members have and what status non-members have. So in other words, every person has the opportunity to be a member of the GPSA, but of course every person does not have to, nor shall they. Only certain people will choose to become members, we understand. And let's talk about who those members are. We basically categorize membership in two ways. The first is, I'm skipping the C verse here, purposely. The first is representatives selected from each graduate field, which will thereafter, hereafter be referred to as GPSA field representatives. And that is how we shall call those people, who we'll talk about in a little bit, who come from graduate professional fields. And then the second name, the name that shall stick, is GPSA voting members, which is a very, very much a carryover from the present language. We currently call one another voting members, and we decided that in the spirit of both Robert Rules and the continuation of a coherent terminology, we feel that the voting member title does not in any way degrade or disenfranchise the field representative, rather it designates the additional rights and responsibilities that those members have. And it should be pointed out at this time, in section 4.02, we've added a very important clause in part B, which I'm going to highlight now, that members from demographic backgrounds reflecting the diverse nature of the university are especially encouraged to participate. This line has been added in part because it reflects the charge of the preamble of the charter, and in part because it fits here. It makes sense to put this statement within the overview of GPSA membership. We decided, as opposed to with any particular subset of membership, whether it be field representatives or GPSA voting members. This part of section 4.03 is new. It talks about the responsibilities of field representatives. I don't think the word responsibility and field representative has been used together in the charter, but here we are stating that field representatives have responsibilities, and we enumerate them fairly clearly. For the most part, they have to do with communications with the GPSA and with their field. So it says, provide updates to constituents regarding GPSA events and initiatives, and solicit feedback where appropriate. So we set up a dialogic relationship between field representatives and their field in their very definition, and then sections A and B below outline ways which we think they should do that. But then very importantly also, they shall elect and empower, and I think those are two related important terms, the GPSA voting members. It should be pointed out that I've eliminated the word voting body or advisory council entirely from this charter. The word voting, the phrase voting body is a collective phrase, which can be avoided by rewriting every sentence in the charter as I've done to use people as the way in which they're referred to as opposed to a body of people. So you'll never see voting body, you'll only see voting members, and you'll see it for the most part, this slide, I think I didn't correct it, but it'll be a capital B followed by a lowercase m. And that should be the way we refer to the voting members. And then they also, a new right to the field representatives, they shall have the ability to elect officers and standing committee chairs. This is new, it empowers them in a further way, and given some of the procedural changes that we wish to enact, we think this can be easily accomplished. So this is to show you that I did recycle some of the material from the previous section. If it's in black, it means not new language, therefore, you have to skip over this, but have the knowledge that we do have, we did recycle material as best we could. Okay. Under section 4.04, the GPSA voting members, there's a similar structure to how membership is determined. Voting members have a sort of additional right or responsibility. They must remain sufficiently informed about issues brought before the GPSA to cast informed votes on resolutions, formations, committees, other matters. We try to be capacious in how we describe the business that they will have to deal with, but we made it clear that, much like the field representatives, they shall elect GPSA voting members, and they shall elect officers. So we then rewrote the language of this article to incorporate the voting membership composition underneath this section, and it is, I think, more cleanly written. It says there shall be 19 voting members composed as follows, and then you see it. I've also enumerated the actual names of professional schools because previously in the charter they had not been referred to by their proper name. And that's kind of the changes for section 4.04, so I'm going to move to 4.05. This has to do with the election of voting members. It is important that this be made clear, since this is the thing that in the next 2 months we will have to enact in this way. So the 14 voting members who represent the divisions of the graduate school will be elected, and this is new, at the second to last GPSA meeting of the academic year. In the current charter, it's not enumerated or made clear as to when this must happen. In this charter, we are requiring that it occur in the second to last meeting, and I think that's important. And then I reworked the language for various caveats about the areas, the caucuses that meet by area, and there I put in the piece about physical sciences. That's actually, it's only new in that I took out a word or two, but it's fairly the same. And the piece about at-large membership is also fairly the same. But enough wording had changed that I put it in purple. So you see there is now, I think, a more clearly delineated way in which the voting members are elected. It's actually not very different at all from standard practice we've had in this body, but it is defined more clearly, and it's defined, I think, much more neatly and more elegantly in the language, because this took up almost double the amount of words in the last term. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, then under section 4.05, the thing about this is a lot of the charter language specifies months or particular meetings, rather than particular meetings. So here, I have admitted that the voting members who represent graduate students enrolled in master's degree programs will be elected at the first regularly scheduled meeting of the fall semester. And you're starting to get the sense that the phrase regularly scheduled meeting is very important. That is defined in the bylaws appropriately. And it just means when the meetings are published and announced, those are considered regularly scheduled meetings. So if by the second regularly scheduled meeting, and then it's the same. So master's candidates don't change, except I'm more, again, clearly listing when these elections must take place. Okay, vacancies. Here, again, not much has changed, but some wording has changed, again, so that the words like first GPSA meeting following the announcement are employed. And again, every time you see like first and GPSA meeting, in the previous charter there were things like discussion and business. So as we reconceive how meetings will proceed in this body, we need to change the charter at every moment to reflect that. And also something to note in 4.06D, that we are, again, almost beating it over the head here, that field representatives and voting members shall elect at-large members. We want it to be clear in every aspect of membership that for the election of members, field representatives and voting members have the same rights and privileges. I think that's been made extremely clear in this chart. Next slide. Okay, so that was the section on membership. There, if you look at the attached supporting documents, because it's in the review mode in Microsoft Word, you'll see things crossed out and new text inserted. That's fine. You can look out over that all you want. There may be a change or two I didn't highlight, but I had to pick the things that I thought were significant enough to bring up on that. So we're doing a time on this section, 15 minutes in almost.
15 minutes.
Okay. So I will take a question or two on section, on part one of my presentation, membership changes. Maybe, I think I have 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, I see 2 minutes for that.
Could you describe how quorum works with the new everybody voting for officers and chairs?
That's covered under the procedures of the bylaws, so I'm going to reserve that. Okay. Yeah.
You said earlier when the beginning of section 4, when you have the right to respond to the graduates, you made it sound like that the only way you could become more involved with the UCSA or apply for a committee is if you start showing up in that. That isn't necessarily the case. You could have someone not attend UCSA and still apply.
That's absolutely true. We I think tried to lay out section 4.01 as a kind of escalating right we could have, because each level represents a different, I think, more serious commitment. But you're absolutely right. One could be a committee member and never attend a GPSA meeting, and that does happen. Yeah.
something.
Yeah, in that section, that section is only for rights, in this, like, rights within the GPSA, not outside of the GPSA. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Part two is under procedural changes, which will address Ben's questions. So, the first thing is that this is now the bylaws. Let me take a step back and say we feel, the committee felt, that it's important that as much as possible, language be moved from the charter to the bylaws for a number of reasons. One, especially in this section, procedural issues of how the organization holds its meetings, has a quorum, and does anything related to, how should we say, week-to-week operation ought not to be in the charter, because to change it would be extremely cumbersome. Moreover, we're trying to make the charter a more readable document, something that should stand the test of time, and that as practices organically change, we think the bylaws are the place for them to happen. And again, too, the charter requires, and we haven't changed it, a two-meeting revision process whereby you have to circulate the resolution at one meeting and then approve it by the second meeting. So, for things like procedural changes, if a meeting format isn't working, we think we want to give the body the ability to change it more immediately, and that's why, especially, this entire section, or rather article, has become an item within the bylaws. So we've more or less taken all of Article 7 from the charter and moved it to the bylaws. So that's the first thing. Now we then looked at the former Article 7 and made changes. So really, even though this is all new to the bylaws, I've only highlighted in purple those changes which reflect an actual procedural change, regardless of which document it is now sitting. That being said, Section 4.02 of the bylaws now has, I think, an important and worth dwelling on point. Meetings shall be scheduled throughout the academic year, totaling 7 meetings per semester. That's it. We have previously made clear that certain meetings shall be deemed business meetings, and certain meetings shall be deemed discussion meetings. It is the intent of this charter and the associated bylaws to do away with that distinction and allow for a flexibility in meeting structure that the executive and the members of the DPSA can decide. We do not want to make it any... We basically have felt that this year alone would suggest that our meetings could sustain a different format. This does not mandate that the meetings be held in any format. It simply mandates the number of meetings per semester, which we think we can agree on. It's been 7 per semester for as long as the GPSA has been, but the format of meetings, that is something which we think each year should be decided. We do, in writing this, without any particular language, hope and suggest the GPSA will move towards a hybrid model of meeting format, in which all members, and again, membership is now defined to include the voting members and the field representatives, will attend all meetings. That is the idea behind this section. I'll take questions at the end, so I'm going to keep going. Section 4.03, under regularly scheduled meetings, again, here we more clearly articulate how discussion and business can be handled, that the executive committee shall determine appropriate discussion and business items, not that they shall determine when business meetings will be held and when discussion meetings will be held, but that there be discussion and business as appropriate. There's no restriction here. There's no absolute or guarantee. The language is flexible, and it gives our leadership the ability to lead. And then here, one that bugged me for a while, I think, and a lot of us, that we shall only require the presiding officer shall only vote, which means he shall not even have to abstain on resolutions or subsidiary motions when the vote will affect the result. And then the outline is passed. Next slide. Okay, this is a new one. This has to do with area summits, and it's fairly clearly articulated. It mirrors more or less the practice of what has occurred this past year in having the various areas meet with their field representatives. And this is basically our first shot on it. Thankfully, this is in the bylaws. If this changes,
much easier to amend this language than it would be if it were the charter. I'm not going to dwell on that too much. Okay, next slide. Now, this slide shows the procedures for quorum and absences. Here's what we've decided. Quorum shall be decided by voting members. That's the definition of quorum. The quorum on every meeting shall be decided by voting members. That's important to us because we always wish to have business be associated with the quorum. That's why in this line it says a quorum of GPSA voting members is required before business items may be voted on at a regularly scheduled meeting. But it then defines how to do that, and then C, it points out that the election of new members may always proceed without quorum at regularly scheduled meetings. To me, that's important because suppose, as an example, the GPSA is dysfunctional one year, the voting membership has collapsed. You can hold new elections without them there. And I think that's important. This is a kind of fail-safe. You can always elect new voting members regardless of quorum. That's important. You don't want to write anything in your bylaws that'll destroy the GPSA. Okay, that's wonderful. Absences, we only define absences for voting members. We do not require, we have no absence restrictions based on field representative status or membership. And that's important because we think that, again, the voting members have made that additional commitment to the GPSA, and thus absences and the policies around them should be for them. Within that decision, we've also redefined how absences should be considered. And basically, it can be excused or unexcused, and that the executive committee has complete power over that decision. Moreover, if the executive committee wishes, they may unseat a member who has more than two unexcused absences by a vote. And so the executive committee is playing an increasingly important role in the absences and membership status of this body, as it should be, I think. And then two, under absences, the voting members may be reseated by a two-thirds vote of the executive. So not listed here, you won't find it in this charter, is a way to unseat by vote of the GPSA voting members. That's not possible within this charter. Next slide. Under removal, however, there is, again, a mechanism that relates back to the distinction between seated and unseated. So here, having defined what unseated means, voting members who are unseated may be removed from the GPSA voting members following a vote by two-thirds of the executive committee. Here again, the executive committee retains the power to remove unseated members. What you don't see here is the ability of this body of the voting members to remove its own members. That's been taken away. It relies on the executive committee. Although it has pointed out to me that since we've now dropped rules as the ultimate arbiter, Robert's rules allows for a body to remove its own members. However, in the bylaws, we've made it clear that the procedure should be through the executive committee. And the same holds for removal of a set of committee members, and the same holds for officers. So removal has been more clearly defined. That's the end of that section. Questions? One.
I want to make a statement, I guess, in support of 4.02. This is the bit that would abolish the distinction between business and discussion meetings. Two things on that point. One, it's about trusting your executive. We elect an executive with the idea that they will provide leadership, that they will run meetings, they will set an agenda that makes sense. The idea is not that we bore everybody to tears with Robert's rules for hours on end. That expressly is not the point. To that end, Brian and I got an email from Mike Walsh today that said something about not abolishing the distinction between consensus building and parliamentary process. This article expressly does not do that. We maintain the discussion component of our meeting and the business component of our meeting. There's still a place for parliamentary speaking.
And Mike Walsh said in that same email that the explicitly defined in the handbook. So that doesn't
mean maybe one further thought, not to realize this is probably if you will, I want to emphasize again, there's no policy on field representative absences. There was a big concern about requiring field representatives to attend all of that boring business. There's no policy on that. The only thing that there is in the funding guidelines says the EVP shall notify the FC chair of a sustained vacancy in any field for the purpose of the appointment.
Okay, so two more hands.
Did
you have a question or you just
want to? Yeah, just a quick question, actually. Just running through a scenario, what if two of your officers are the ones who are problematic and are not showing up to meetings?
Two executive officers?
Yes.
Right.
Now,
the GPSA is in big trouble.
Okay.
Technically, the GPSA can still unseat them.
Right.
That's right. If you're right, if the entire executive board collapsed, all three of them,
and it's worth noting again, this is Chris's point, that we can always suspend the bylaws.
Yep, that's right.
That if complete dysfunction happens, a member can make a motion to suspend the bylaws. We can then make a motion to remove a member of the executive. We can then reinstate the bylaws.
Yep, that's good. Okay, then.
A couple definition questions. It seems to be implied that voting members vote on business items. Field reps vote on some things, but it's not clear if they can vote on, like, sets of body resolutions. So those non-business items, is business items defined? Second, the term academic year is used a few times. Is academic year defined, and is that the same as term of GPSA? And then finally, if a voting member is unseated, do they become field rep?
No.
They're just limbo unseated. But they don't count as quorum, they're just a student at that point.
Well, they're moved, no, they're unseated, but they're not moved.
I guess I don't know the distinction.
To answer your question, I think those are worth defining in item 2 of the bylaws. So I'll look into that.
I noticed that you go through the procedures in the bylaws except for when the elections are taking place. And I was wondering what you're
I mean, parliamentarily, we have to put anything related to the elections of officers into our charter because there must be an article on officers. I actually agree with you. I would actually like to have seen anything related to the elections be in the bylaws. Mm-hmm. As far as I am aware, I do not have the ability to do that. If someone wants to look into that, let me know. That'd be great, but I don't think I can do that.
Tom, I can speak to that. You don't. The charter must maintain the election for that.
Okay, like
as in
when they occur.
Not necessarily when they occur. They have to prescribe an order for election of officers.
So is the question, you could say how it occurs and not the when? Is that
what you're but in the bylaws it says the GPSA Elections Committee and details on it. I think it's a matter of that, like, you need to have enough framework in the charter to at least push forward elections, but the exact details of how it's done, we don't know.
Okay,
but
I thought that the
discussion
that you mentioned when the elections take place is somewhat problematic.
Well, if there was a suggestion to move it to some other date than as described in the charter, please send that comment to me. But this, I think the committee who worked on this thought that this schedule was best possibility. There was a question from Brian.
No, it was more just a statement. So Tom showed lovely, so changes both the absence. The key thing that was removed from the absence is there's no longer proxy voting, so you cannot email in a vote. So to vote on something, you have to be in the vote, present.
Which is in accordance with Robert's rule. It speaks very strongly against proxy voting. Basically, it says that anybody can be influenced by the debate, so it's a condition of voting is being present for that debate.
So that entire section of the, within the chart now in the bylaws, we've got the proxy section and the absence is now completely gone.
Yes, about 10 minutes.
Okay, 10 minutes. I'm going to move on to part 3. Committee changes. Article 5 is officers. Officers will be elected at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the academic year.
and all GPSA members shall be eligible to elect the officers of GPSA. And again, we've defined GPSA members to mean voting members and field representatives. So when I say GPSA members, I mean that definition. I think it's important we start using that language. We start saying things like the GPSA members will elect the president. And we all know what we mean. So I think that's something to get us into a habit of doing. So, next one. The president's responsibilities have been rewritten in accordance with the employee assembly, university assembly language, and so it doesn't change more or less what he does, but it's written in a way that I think is a best practice because the employee assembly has recently rewritten its charter, and I find the language compelling. Note, there's nothing about the president's responsibilities to the university assembly that's been relegated to bylaws. Next. Executive Vice President similarly has put some changes to this role. Here's a bigger change that's occurred. We are now charging the Executive Vice President to recruit graduate professional students reflecting the diverse nature of the university. And this refers back to Article 4, Section 4.01b, as well as the preamble of the charter. We are charging one of the executive officers in our charter to be responsible for this. How it actually comes about is definitely a bylaw question. But we felt that this officer is the person most appropriately responsible for that. And so they also have responsibilities for attendance and maintaining membership lists, distributing agendas, and chairing the executive committee, which is to say, we see the executive vice president moving away from some hybrid role as it currently stands in its role as communications chair and executive vice president, and towards an executive who is the vice president. Okay. In Article 4, I rewrote how officers shall be replaced. The language was very convoluted, and so I'm going to skip through these, but just to point out, nothing really changes. It's just different. It's just differently written and more efficiently, I believe. Okay, next, Article 6. This is important, and it again reflects the philosophy of trying to let our bylaws be strong and powerful documents. We've changed Section 6.02 to state that there shall be the Executive Committee, Operations and Staffing Committee, Elections, Appropriations, the GPSAFC, and other committees as described in the bylaws. The reason for this is that very often the charter is changed because particular committees want to be added or deleted. We don't feel that the charter should be the place for those decisions. It would be unnecessary to do so. And so these other committees as described in the bylaws, we feel, will allow for there to be additional standing committees that are not enumerated. The question has come up as to why these committees need to be enumerated. And the answer is that because our charter is somewhat cumbersome in other areas, it is necessary that appropriations and the GPSAFC be enumerated here, since they are enumerated in Article 8 on the student activity fee, and you have to define them in order to list them in Article 8. Also, the executive committee is listed in the officers. Also, the operations and staffing committee and the elections committee are listed in officer responsibilities. So long as we maintain those responsibilities in Article 5, it is necessary to list them in Article 6, parliamentarily. However, every other committee can be put to the bylaws. This will also make it easier if the new standing committee is added, no charter change is needed. And then we point out in Section 6.02c that standing committees can appoint subcommittees. This is actually already true by Robert's rules, but we think it requires two sentences in the charter, and there they are. Then, moving to the bylaws, there have been changes made to the committees. These are perhaps in some ways less controversial, in other ways more controversial. So there's some that we can sort of breeze through. This one on executive, I think, follows from the officer responsibilities. So skipping to operations and staffing. Here's one I want to raise for your attention. 3.0 D3, that in coordination with the entire body of the GPSA and interested individuals, that the Operations Staffing Committee shall ensure that the practice of the GPSA as meetings and campus activities are environmentally sustainable. To address the question of is there a sustainability committee in this charter or bylaw, no. This is the only mention of sustainability in the documents.
it was felt by the majority of the members that this would be the extent to which GPSA is currently comfortable pursuing sustainability-related activities, that is to say, through the Operations Staffing Committee, focusing on the practices of this body, as opposed to trying to provide a forum or other means to promote dialogue and sustainability issues in a broader campus context. Then we move to the University Assembly, which is Section 3.09. Again, what we understand right now is that the University Assembly will ask for two representatives from the graduate population, and that the president shall be required to serve as a member of the UA going forward, as a full member, not an ex officio member, and therefore we put this in the bylaws. Next, back to Communications Committee we go. We've added a second line to the purpose of the Communications Committee, that the Communications Committee will ensure that the GPSA is representative of the diversity within the Cornell graduate professional community, and then the committee is also charged with reaching out to student organizations that promote diversity in the Cornell community and encourage their participation in the GPSA. We feel very strongly that this meets the mandate and is important in promoting diversity on this campus, because the Communications Committee is the organ by which news and information is passed along. And so it's important to note that Communications is now charged in its duties, number six, to promote diversity within the GPSA. The committee will form a diversity focus group. This focus group will communicate with student organizations that promote diversity on campus to encourage participation of their members. And here, the key word is communicate. We felt this was a communication issue, and we feel strongly it should be lodged under the duties of communication. While it reflects a greater responsibility to this committee chair, may I point out that this committee chair is no longer the executive vice president, and we feel that this person would be more dedicated to these duties than a joint position could possibly be. On 3.07 for student advocacy, note here too that we've added similar language of focus group to student advocacy on the issue of mental health and general well-being. The focus group will hold regularly scheduled meetings with administrators. Let me say that this focus group language, I think, is the best possible compromise at this time. It is in the bylaws. The bylaws are more easily changed, and that's rightfully so. So if a different structure is proposed, whether it be subcommittee or otherwise, you have the right to do so here. But it really need not be bogged down by the charter. It's definitely a bylaws issue. And so this focus group has specific responsibilities to communicate with enumerated groups, and if those names change, if people become more or less important to these dialogues, this can be easily changed. Also point out that Section 3.08, we have changed the event committee to now the Graduate Professional Student Programming Board. This is pre-staged a larger move to see the GPSPB move as a byline-funded student organization in the next round of applications, and that should they so choose, they can informally call themselves whatever they want, but that this language provides a much more capacious legitimacy to it than the event committee. Okay, so nothing changed on 3.10, next slide there, and then we move to 3.12 under ad hoc. The next several slides are somewhat arduous, I understand, but they actually, as we kind of scroll through them quickly, they represent a very, very well thought out way to run ad hoc committees in this body in extreme detail. I thank the members working on that for that. And I would say that it's very clear how ad hocs will be treated at the GPSA by the end of the last slide. Thank you to everyone who helped. Let's have questions on the second, third section, and I'm pressing to let me know what time I have.
Can you repeat that again?
Yeah, right. Okay. Questions on section three? Ben.
How do you envision the VP of operations with his charge of operations and staffing to address the diversity relating with the communications subcommittee's responsibility for diversity? It seems like the same job to two different groups.
I mean, the vice president of operations and vice president of operations is overall responsible for staffing the committee. So in the sense that staffing involves persons, therefore there is some stake in the game. But the operations staffing, we don't feel, has any real way to ensure that diverse applicants apply. Rather, that's an issue of communication. Advocacy, by contrast, is charged with broader campus-wide diversity issues, and that's proper.
But again, there's an issue within, there's two issues here. There's membership within the DPSA, which has to come through communications to other persons, and then there's larger issues that affect supporting graduate students and being at the NSAC advocacy question. Other persons, yes.
I just wanted to very quickly on sustainability. I think maybe there's some rationale for why this language is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was felt that, that there are two things that we're talking about here. One is graduate students who want to engage in sustainability activities on campus, and the other issue is graduate students who want to have a voice in policy as it relates to sustainability. As for the second point, I think it was felt that there are other, it's not about silencing voices, but rather about making sure that those voices are going into a place where they make the most difference, such as the UA's Campus Infrastructure Committee, which has a charge from the president to deal with these particular issues, university sustainability, that sort of thing. As far as graduate students involved in sustainability activities on campus, which are great, excellent, and wonderful, that is the sort of thing that can happen within the framework of a SAO recognized organization. In fact, they'd be eligible for more money than they would as part of the GPSA.
Due to time constraints, we have time for one or two more questions.
Okay, one or two more questions. That's two hands to hold.
Okay, I want to say two things. One was I just wanted to say the focus group. Another rationale that you didn't mention was that for the focus groups, what again is that members of that committee don't have to be the only members in the focus group, which is you can have members from outside of the committee that forms the focus group. And the second thing was just related to the move to make the events committee a graduate student programming board, so I can speak on this. It really, the charter change only changes the name and opens up basically the application process to become a byline funded organization. I think this is only a good thing, and it allows basically the current events committee to have access to more funding and flexibility. And really, according to Brenda, we would be advised by graduates, her in the graduate school, and this is a much more appropriate home for the graduate student programming board, which currently doesn't actually exist. So that's
up, Brian.
Just to go back to finish Evan's comments, you'll notice that in the text regarding the sustainability statement and operations of staff, and we added the words and interested individuals because currently the operations and staffing committee would only be the committee chair. So by having interested members, someone who is not a committee chair or part of the committee who is interested in sustainability now has that access to work with the committee on that issue.
And finally, if I may, I want to point out to this to the rather long resolution. It is open to friendly amendments. However, we spent a lot of time on this, and I would ask that you follow the logic as you read it through. It begins with the bylaws that give me the power to propose such a resolution. It continues through the various meetings that were held by the interested parties. It then continues to describe the kinds of changes that have been made. And it resolves, more or less, at the very end, that these documents be approved by the body. There are, as I said, a number of co-signers. I thank them for that. And I guess lastly, I would look forward to continued dialogue both outside of this meeting and in the meeting. Although formal debate, this is my like 30 seconds here, but although formal debate can be useful, if this charter, I feel, is derailed completely, we're going to have to revert back to our old charter. So if you want to debate formally, my only suggestion is come up with amendments as opposed to trying to vote down the whole thing. That's my last word on it. Yeah.
Just one last thing. I believe we did get rid of the charter review process. We felt that, you know, having this sort of designated charter review process kind of encouraged it, causes procrastination. Throughout the year, we all wanted to make tweaks to the charter, but then everyone's like, well, let's just wait for the charter review process. And so suddenly, as the process started, we just got all these issues. And it was a very interesting educational experience, but not something I don't think is necessary to go through.
Well, hopefully we never need to change the charter again. So,
hey, that'd be awesome.
That's it. Thanks. All right, and thank you. And so moving on the agenda, If you have any questions or comments, please contact Tom or any member of the operations and staffing committee. They'd be happy to take them and discuss with you the different proposals that are going through. And so the timeline for this is we're going to discuss it once more at the next discussion meeting, and then we'll have a formal vote on it at the next voting body meeting on March 7th. March 14th. March 7th is the discussion meeting.
Yes.
And so just be aware of that. Read through it. Make sure all your questions and comments are satisfied, because hopefully you can just vote quickly on the 14th. Moving on into the agenda, we have up next open forum. And the first item of open forum in the next 7 minutes is strategic planning, which is the emergency funding for graduate students. And I designated Ben for this, if you would like to address the body.
So before I start, just a quick procedural question. I'm going to move to establish an ad hoc committee. I understand it needs to be under the auspices of an existing committee, which will be student advocacy. Since Marquis is not a voting member, can he make that motion, or do I make the motion on his behalf? Does anybody care?
No.
You have to. You can make the motion on his behalf.
And you are allowed, because are you a member of student advocacy?
I am not. I'm just some guy.
A member of the requesting committee needs to be part of the committee for VPO purposes.
Well, any member, at the current moment, any member of the GPSA can propose a resolution or motion. So Marquis can propose the motion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay. So the background thing for the motion that Marquis will be making is Brenda Wick last fall approached me because apparently there is a student helping students fund that was established by the FA in 1988, or the 88-89 academic year. And that was paid with $25 from the then student activity fee per, or $5 per student per year, and created a very large body of money that 5 years later they stopped contributing to, and it hasn't really been used. So it's been growing and growing, and sort of made this endowment that isn't being drawn down. So especially during economically interrupting times when there's a large body of money that nobody is using, it attracts attention. So it's a rather suggestion that I investigate a little bit to see if this is something that graduate students can get access to. The GPSA was formed in 1993, so if this fund was formed in 1988, it seems possible that graduate students contributed to it, so we might be eligible for it. It turns out that the activity fee for graduate and professional students was split off from the FA in 1986, before the GPSA existed. So it seems like the graduate and professional students didn't contribute, but we don't really know. But the student activity fee became a GPSA responsibility in 1999, 6 years after it was formed. So there's a lot of institutional history and confusion and stuff, but the long and short of it is, it's not currently clear what the variety of emergency funds are available to graduate professional students for things like, I've got a family health emergency, I need to travel home, I need winter clothes because I'm a student from Hawaii and I've never worn a sweater before, or, you know, emergency issues, broadly defined. I think that it would be good to ensure that all graduate professional students have some sort of opportunity to apply for emergency funds. I don't have clear ideas of what the parameters would be, how that would be administered, but there do exist some funds that have been created through student funding at Cornell University. So, based on that, I wrote up a motion from RP, which is right there.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to establish an ad hoc committee on graduate professional emergency funding under the auspices of the Student Advocacy Committee in consultation with the Executive Committee, the Appropriations Committee, and any other relevant university offices.
Second.
I got it
first.
Okay.
Second by
the poll. Part of the motion is to charge the ad hoc committee with delivering a report by the end of this GPSA cycle, so by the last business meeting of this body, suggesting what emergency funds exist, what are the guidelines for them, and making a recommendation about how this body might proceed. So, clear task, clear end deadline, membership would include me, a member of the operations, the Student Advocacy Committee, and we would open it seeking another member, ideally somebody who is
young and interested in reviewing university policy and doing some detective work and learning about university government.
So there is a motion on the
information.
There's a point of information, Evan?
I think, if I recall correctly, an ad hoc committee requires three members. Yeah, council, three members. So do we need a third member in order for the motion to pass? Or can we pass the motion and then find a third member later?
I'll just serve as a third member. Let's just go with that. So there is a motion and a second on the table, so now voting is in order. If you vote in favor of the motion that was just made, please raise your placard at this time. So there is 14 in favor. Any opposed, please raise your placard. One opposed and one abstention. So 14-1-1, the motion passes, and an ad hoc committee to look into a student emergency funding has been formed. All right. And with that, it is 6:58 p.m. We have 2 minutes to discuss any further items in open forum. Or the chair would entertain. Yes, Brian?
So I thank Chris for the last discussion meeting and coverage he made on Resolution 5 while I was in bed at home. Basically, Chris kept saying throughout the entire meeting, I'm not sure what Brian was thinking, but I think that every answer Chris gave you last Monday was correct. So I channel Brian very much. So again, I thank everyone for that, and I thank Evan for agreeing to move our board to tonight, just so we know that the administration was going to form a response based on the GPSA mental health resolution and the SA resolution. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments in the 1 minute remaining? The chair would also entertain a motion to adjourn. There is a motion to adjourn by Evan and a seconded by Chris. We are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.